Germ Warfare is Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas on TNT Radio. Into my second hour, I had a great conversation last night with the editor of Off Guardian. And by the way, if you don't read Off Guardian, you need to change that. It's a great source of news. One of the editors is Kit Knightley. And they got the name because a few of them used to leave comments under The Guardian, under their articles, and they were eventually banned. So they decided to create their own The Guardian under their articles, and they were eventually banned. So they decided to create their own news source called Off Guardian, in which they would cover the news that is just being censored, silenced, suppressed, etc. And it doesn't really matter what side of the political spectrum it is. It's anything that is just not making it into the mainstream zeitgeist, they'll publish. But what really had me enjoying the conversation was everything you wouldn't expect. It was chatting about movies. And as it turns out, he is a big fan of movies. Now, over the last few months, I've had a lot of pushback from the sort of the internet peers saying, you know, why would you want to watch Hollywood? How dare you watch Hollywood? You're supporting this and you're supporting that, and they're the enemy, etc. And, you know, they are to a large degree. But as Catherine Austin Fitz says, you can learn a lot from movies. There is a lot of messaging that occurs in movies. And for example, Lord of the Rings is a prime example. Huge amount of symbolism, messaging, storylines that you can make parallels with. For example, you have this idea of Frodo carrying the ring, which represents hope and, you know, great future, etc. And he is the unsung hero. You know, he's a hobbit. But you have all these massive battles going on essentially for three movies. And without those battles, he wouldn't be able to make it to the end. But at the same time, you can watch a movie like Top Gun, which is one of my favorite movies. And you can just sit back and enjoy jets, you know, in dogfights. And it really is fantastic. And yes, you can be cynical about Tom Cruise, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, yes, yes. Everyone, don't think anybody disagrees. But for those 2 hours, what matters is F-18 dogfights. And they are beautiful jets. Top Gun 1, by the way, is worth watching. It's a good old 80s movie with a great soundtrack. And someone said to me the other day, yes, but why would you want to watch that? It's just a distraction. That's exactly right. Excuse me. It is a distraction. It's a distraction because that's what theater is. That's what art is. So you go to an art gallery, you're being distracted from life just for a couple hours. Because that is also what makes us who we are. At the end of the day, you know, a good cinematic experience is essentially art. And if your mind is so weak that you fall apart after watching a movie, then perhaps watching movies isn't something that you should be doing. But if you are able to watch, you know, something beautiful or something funny or something that's perhaps based on a true life story that inspires you to go and read up on it, you know, and you end up having new talking points in life, I think that is a great thing. And I think it adds to our human experience. I think it's very important. You know, when my wife and I were in France, we went and spent a day at the Palace of Versailles. And it is absolutely incredible. You know, you look up at this amazing architecture, at this incredible artwork that is just everywhere. And it completely completely transports you to a whole different paradigm just for a few hours. I would hate to live in a place that big, but just for a few hours, it would be amazing to experience that kind of life. Imagine, I mean, just imagine living that kind of life. And people did live like that and still do. And as I said, being there for that 6, 7, 8 hours is an escape. It's a distraction. Because if you are so caught up, you know, just trying to oppose the globalists, you are going to end up taking antidepressants and living a very depressing life. You're going to find no meaning to wake up. And that's where I'm trying to go with this talking point is a silver lining for me from this 2.5 years of pseudo pandemic has forced me to reevaluate what's important to me in life, the things that matter. And the things that matter tend to circle around me, my wife, my family, friends, community. And a community doesn't have to be physical. It can also be a digital community because that is the kind of world we are living in now. But generally, those with whom you have common denominators. And there is, for me, something special about waking up in the morning again. I don't see a pointless existence. I'm not nihilistic like that. And I think it's an incredibly dark place to be. And I don't think we should be so caught up in the pessimism of our future that we ignore the beauty and that we ignore what actually is lovely around us. And I would encourage people to get back into looking at art, look at architecture, look at paintings, maybe watch some great movies. I'm not necessarily saying get caught up on Netflix. That's not what I'm saying. But I think any reasonable person will understand the point that I'm trying to make. And with that in mind, I'm going to go to my next guest. So my name is Germ, and this is TNT Radio.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversations.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I am joined. Now, I've got to get the surname right. I think I'm going to get it wrong, so please forgive me, Elsa.
Sheeda. Exactly, but everyone knows the word she. I mean, she and he, even though they're not okay anymore. But my name starts with that very obvious thing, she, and I am a she. And then
I'm not going to forget that now.
Changes it, improves it. Schneider, Schreiber, Schruder. And that's because those are more common. I have an Austrian background. There are like less than 10% as many Austrians as there are Germans. Therefore, everyone wants to make my family name German, which it isn't.
And the German would be the sk sound, eh?
No, it would be Scheider. Divider. Mine is Schieder, Tiefton, Justice.
Schieder. I like that. It's much easier to remember.
All the difference. Yes. Okay. Sorry for interrupting. It is a primary Austrian characteristic. If you ever associate with Austrians, get ready to interrupt because they'll interrupt you.
That's absolutely fine by me. Just on that quickly, it reminds you of the word schedule or schedule. How do you say it?
Schedule, because that's how we say it in Canada, which is where I happen to be located. It's like tomato, tomato, potato, patata, either, either, neither, neither. Yikes. Take your pick.
Okay, let's talk about your background, because I am very interested in some of the stuff that you talk about. But for those who don't know who you are.
Okay, my background is one of curiosity. I had a father who loved to read, like he even read the encyclopedia. So that's not a formal background, but it's an amazing part of my background. Because by the time I was 8, I remember sitting with my father and a couple of his friends when they were discussing world hunger. It probably didn't happen that often, but I really remember it vividly. And I think that's given me the assurance with ideas that I take my ideas seriously. So that's part of my background. I have a mind of my own. I got a PhD, so that went a distance. And one of the things that interested me on the PhD level, I bumped into doing interviews on people who become very interested in a human rights movement, like feminism, as I had. And I expected it to be a simple process, like, you know, you're outside it, you get involved, you get very involved, you're overjoyed. But I found it was more complex. And I think that ties in with CRT, which I know you're interested in discussing, critical race theory. Because I found, I interviewed 12 women only for about 3 hours, and I thought I'd find the simple process, but nine of them told me about something I wasn't anticipating, not at all. I was like, and I wanted to deny it, because they talked about an anger stage. Instead of just going into, this is fantastic, they went into, I want a divorce from my husband. Or, you know, like anger, often at men in general. And I had to acknowledge it when I was being honest with myself, that even though I'd always been a daddy's girl and still was, like, I had a very close relationship with my father until his death. And in fact, I still feel I have a close relationship with him. Despite that, I got angry at all men, except the close ones. So if you got out inside, like to be a friend, I wasn't angry at you. But if you were further out, and I think that that's where CRT comes in. Now, I will say I got interested in this because I saw that feminism kept looking outward, rape, battering, incest, glass ceiling, everything. But it didn't look inside. What does it do to you to get involved? And therefore, and I, that's what got me to do the interviews. And that's what got me to find that unexpected thing. I sent off my initial ideas to a lot of the small magazines I knew about, and nobody was interested. You could write the most banal thing on rape, battering, incest, and it would get published. But here was this thing that was new, and no one was interested, which actually astounded me. At the time, I didn't know what it was. Now I think there's a block in self-exploration, and it may have been encouraged if there were negative powers at be, like globalist elite, whatever, that wouldn't want us looking at ourselves. Now, what I found, these interviews are three decades ago. What I found is that the people, the nine people who had gone through it, talked about they had gone through it. In other words, usually after about a year or so, that broke, something broke it. And they stayed strongly feminist, in other words, for women's rights, but the anger dissipated. Now, CRT is anger made into granite. The anger stage is frozen. It's like, you know, when you see these giant mammoths that are defrosted from permafrost, and they got frozen in an instant. Well, CRT is like one developmental stage, like terrible twos, frozen and encouraged to be frozen, shoved to be frozen. And I'd say so much is happening on this in the world. So I see CRT as part of the horrible things that are being done to the world. I am in favor of every rights movement. I know many people are against it. Look at the identity politics. It's terrible. Well, my mother got paid half as much as the man beside her. I'm all in favor of identity, but my father was in favor of my mother getting the same salary as him, like as the man beside her, which wasn't my father, who worked somewhere else. He didn't want his wife getting half the pay. Just think, you know, someone comes home with $10 instead of $20, what would you like? I mean, you have to have a pretty fragile ego to say, I want my wife not to earn adequately. So I'm in favor of every right. When I got hired at the college, I wanted to get the same chance as a man, but I didn't want to get a chance as a woman to beat out every man. I wanted to be hired on competence. So I am for the human rights movements, but I think they can be hijacked. And I think so many things that were good have been hijacked. So if you'd like me to talk more about CRT, I will. Otherwise, I'll pass it back to you because you might want to interrupt me at this point.
No. I uh, I'm a big fan of analyzing these exact talking points. But before we go any further, I'll need to ask you, just for the sake of clarity, would you mind defining both feminism and critical race theory?
Would I mind defining them?
Do we mean when we talk about feminism?
Okay, I am an old school feminist. I did my MA on Nellie McClung, who worked for Votes for Women. She was on the Canadian Persons case. There were five women who fought to get women included as people, because before that, we were not considered people in Canada, which is crazy. So that's the situation she was living. She was also the first woman who was elected into the parliament of her province. She was the first woman on the CBC, all on her competence. She was an amazing woman. She was also a happily married woman, mother of five, wrote a bestseller. And she definitely would have called herself a suffragette, you know, as they were called back then. And I remember long, long ago, someone said to me, an older woman, Elsa, you're one of these women's libbers, aren't you? And I said, yes. And she said, so am I, but don't tell my husband. So that's the feminism I am for, equal rights, equal access. When I was growing up, women had a quota at the med school, the English med school in my city, Montreal. There was a 10% quota for women and for Jews. I'm against both quotas. I think you should get in on merit. And the year they got rid of the quota, it was just over 30% of the people who succeeded were women. So that's the kind of feminist I am. And that's okay, the
so
kind of...
So you're the true feminist.
Yes, I consider that I am pre-hijacking feminist, you know, because I think all the... Martin Luther King, I have a dream. It isn't the dream to bash all whites and get them in the ocean and kill them. It's I have a dream that my children would be judged on color, not on color, but on their characteristics, on who they are. And I was brought up to be anti-racist. I mean, it was just natural in my family. There were very few non-white people in Montreal at that time. And yet my household was like my father had a black friend, and just about his best friend was Indian from India. And he had a couple of Jewish friends, and he had French Canadian friends. It was just, if I look back, I sort of think my father had a quota system. If he had one or two people in a category, he moved to another category, not consciously, but there was a real appreciation of different people in my family. And that to me is just the way to be. So I am also the first person at my university. I was just an MA student, my God, but I was given a section of women's literature and I thought I will be inclusive. So I included a lesbian novel. None had ever been included. Even though there were two professors I knew were gay, they had never overtly, you know, they might have included something, but not as a gay novel. I did. I included a book by Jane Rule. And I was terrified when I went into class. I was an MA student. I had no tenure, nothing. But I introduced it to my students as in I wanted to be inclusive. And so I had a working class woman and I had, you know, a Chinese Canadian woman and I had a Black American woman. So I introduced this as inclusiveness. And I'll tell you, I got raves. My class got like skyrocketing at the end. And I explained it to students in a way that they would want it. But I wasn't for, let's put down the other women. Let's put down middle class and wealthy women. Let's hate Jane Austen because my God, she came from, you know, whatever. Mm. It's better for us. I also ended up, not then, but later, there were only two novels by Black women written in the 19th century. I included one of those, and I don't know anyone else who ever taught Eola Leroy. And my students love that novel. It's not as brilliant as Jane Austen, But it's from a brilliant woman who was not a brilliant novel writer, but it was a wonderful melodrama. And she played out so many things in her book. So my students adored that book because it got them a glimpse into a world they wouldn't otherwise have had. So that's the kind of feminist and anti-racist I am.
Do you think that there might be a problem, though, in trying to be too inclusive? In other words, do you think that society or the sort of postmodern zeitgeist that we're living in tries too hard to be inclusive?
No.
So in other words, ignoring the ideas and just focusing on what people look like.
I think there is a lot to being inclusive. I got a BA in English and then almost got an MA without reading a word by a woman. Now, my professors would not have seen themselves as anti-woman. I didn't feel that they didn't like my writings or my essays and stuff like that. It's just they didn't ever think that, oh, you know, why don't we teach Moby Dick? Okay, even the word dick is in the title, so we've got to teach Moby Dick. Almost mobile dick, you know, like just accidentally they slipped that one in. And Jane Austen wasn't in there. Charlotte Bronte wasn't that in there. So I made the discovery after my, but the last year, the last class of my MA level changed all that because it was on Canadian women writers. So I had one course on all women writers. And then for the next couple of years, I just read women because I realized my own bookshelves were basically men's books with some women's books, but those had never been taught. So I found, can you go too far? Yes, if you're going to say, I will evaluate you on the basis of your being, or I will hire you even though you're not as good a doctor or dentist or whatever it is, because you're from this minority, your marks suck, but you're going to get into the university and I'm going to bend over backwards for you. No, you have to do competence. I did with the Black written novel from the 19th century. I made an exception. It wasn't as good as Jane Austen. And that was because only two novels had been written in that category. And I actually found the book fascinating. If I'd been bored, no way. But I was fascinated by it. By the way, I like melodrama. I find it a fascinating category. Mm. And that's the only melodrama I taught. So I would not have taught a book I didn't have respect for, didn't think had a lot to contribute to my students. I think so many things have been poisoned. So somebody got a few hundred thousand views on Facebook or YouTube with a video on asking a woman for coffee is worse than rape. I believe that. Yeah, right. I believe this woman had not experienced even one rape. And somebody might have asked her out for coffee. Like I'll tell you what my attitude is. Everyone can ask everyone. I could ask you out for a coffee. You can ask me out for a coffee. And exactly. It could be just an innocent asking out. So I am not for stop contact between men and women, people of different races, sexual orientations. I'm for widen it. And that also means that if somebody is gay or lesbian, they can ask somebody where they don't know their sexuality out for a coffee. And the other person has the right to say, you know, whatever, like, yes, no. In other words, I'm for that if you are heterosexual, you have to be able to stand up that somebody might actually think that you might be gay. Like, it's not a horror. It's the same way, you know. So in other words, I'm for people being comfortable with who they are and living in a world where we do our best to really be close to other people and interrupt them.
Well, speaking of interrupting, we're going to cut to a break. I am busy chatting to Elsa Shida about feminism and critical race theory. Be right back.
Christina Borgeson on TNT Radio.
It was an author's note, and he wrote, I'll quote it. He says, I have found, and he's talking about these shootings, I have found that these events have indeed happened all over the country. In every instance that I have investigated, the incident at the women's school in Canada, the shopping center incident in Canada, the Stockton, California massacre, and the murder of Rabbi Meir Kahane, the shooters were all ex-mental patients or were current mental patients who were all on Prozac. This drug, when taken in certain doses, increases the serotonin level in the patient, causing extreme violence. And he says, couple that with post-hypnotic suggestion or control through, he starts talking about brain implants or microwave. He's basically talking about MK Ultra stuff. That's what started you thinking of.
Christina Borgeson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
The new communism is COVIDism. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Elsa, where would you say in society might it be preferable to have exclusivity?
Exclusivity? Well, you should be able to have a club for anything, like women's only, men only, unless it is a power thing. Because it used to be that there were no clubs, let's say, for businesswomen, and there were clubs only for businessmen. So it really was a way that the men just, well, they might just feel more comfortable with men, except that there's no way for a woman to be socialized with men, like the St. James Club or whatever it was. So, but if a group of Austrians wants to get together, unless we're doing it to exclude the rest of the world and just take over the world or something, then yes, Austrians should be able. But I'll say that Austrians in Canada have been incredibly inclusive. They had an Austrian ski club, which ended up being 90% non-Austrian. And that's because the Austrians married outside their group. And so one of the founding members was a man from India who had married a woman from Austria. So of course he was in the group. And then the other people also married non-Austrians. So, you know, like it, like, so they also, so that to me is the kind of exclusivity that works, that, but I don't know. But by the way, I want to tell you something else. I don't have all the answers. I just know that the human rights movements, like votes for women, et cetera, equal pay for women, those things are good things. And then I know.
Sorry,
we're both waiting for the other.
I interrupted you.
And then the other thing I know is you can take it away from us. I have experienced so much how you can take away a good movement. It's just like if you fall in love with your wife. Some people, when they fall in love, get rabidly jealous of everyone else. Does that mean we shouldn't have love? No, it means that it's important to love well. And it's important to have a human rights movement in a psychologically healthy way. And my experience, let's say 3 out of the 12 women didn't go through the anger phase. I wasn't psychologically aware enough then, but my guess is that these women didn't have anger issues. So there was no way for anger to emerge during that phase because they didn't have repressed anger just waiting to get out. So...
Where does that anger stem from, though? It can't just be, Yeah, please go on. I'm just asking. I don't know where that anger would come from. It has to start somewhere.
Okay, I have a PhD in psychology, and I got that that this research was part of it into identity development. Where does it come from? Well, for one of the women, it came directly from an experience of herself as a woman. When she was 14, she was acquaintance raped by three of her brother's friends who were taking her home and raped her on the way there. She repressed the memory. It didn't come out till she was 34 and she saw a movie on date rape. And then she was enraged. But most of the women, or women I've talked to since then, are people who are Black, gay, disability. That's not where it comes from. There's childhood exclusion, being bullied, jealousy. So there are just issues, like, or there's an abusive family, there's being beaten, there's being sexually abused. It can even be like a boy abused by a boy, whatever it is. So there are just unresolved issues inside the person. We have a society where a lot of people have all kinds of issues. That's why we have these huge psychology movements. And I have one myself, by the way. It's called Full Flourishing. And if anyone's interested, they can look at fullflourishing.com. And that's just that it's better if we find a way to get past that stuff. So the rights movement, just tap into that, because they give a release point, because men have done nasty things to women. Ha ha. Whites have done nasty things. Aha. Straights have done nasty things. So yay. This just is like a well, like somebody puts a well shaft down into oil or water, boom, up comes the anger. Now, most of the people didn't have inexhaustible anger, but also the women I talked to first, at that time, the anger wasn't being fueled by a rage movement like CRT. Now, CRT gets people trapped. So, in fact, I wrote about CRT recently, and I have a video out on it. Would you like me to talk about it?
With absolute pleasure. Yes, definitely.
Okay. I didn't argue against CRT, because when somebody is enraged and you come to them with logic, they just rage back at you. And the two of you can explode at each other like Austrians. Boom, boom. I'm remembering Austrian. But except the thing is, in my family, it was fun when we argued. When you get to somebody in a rage trap, it isn't fun. It becomes a locked, pitched battle. So what I did in my CRT thing is, I moved it to facts, but I moved it through emotion. And that is, I went back and I looked at my history. And I said, one of my first childhood memories around race was from a book that my parents had. And it had this wonderful image of a woman running across ice floes, except I couldn't read the book because it was in German. And but one day I was so tempted, and German is phonetic, so it's easy to sound out the words, and I got hooked by that book. Well, that book was Uncle Tom's Cabin, or in German, Onkel Tom's Kabine. And so I learned of two things together. There was slavery, and slavery was horrible. We had to end it. Slavery was deadly. I remember crying, and I can easily get to tears even now if I think about Uncle Tom dying and all that kind of stuff. But what I learned about there, and I didn't know it, it was a white woman who wrote that book, and she was a very strong abolitionist. So CRT ignores abolition. How can you talk about slavery and not pay attention to abolition? If we're supposed to give reparation to Blacks, we should give even more reparation to these people who were abolitionists, who often risked a lot. There were hundreds of thousands of young men who died for abolition. So shouldn't we find their heirs, their descendants, and give them reparation? It's a ridiculous situation. I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying that from the beginning, I found out about abolition. And one of my childhood heroines was Clara Barton. I don't know if South Africa, if you know of her.
No, I haven't heard of her.
Okay. I read this book, and it's about a year or two after, and thank God it was in English. It was a biography of this amazing woman who started out as an amazing little girl, and she became somebody who went to the front line in the Civil War as a nurse. And I'm one of these people, and I inherited this from my father. It's a genetic weakness. I easily cry. Mm. He did too, even though he was a man and he defied all gender stereotypes. This big, strong, muscular man. And he could cry at a drop of a hat. You know, you could make him sad about anything. And I am definitely genetically linked. So anyhow, this was another white person who was risking her life for abolition. So I never heard of slavery in the context of bad whites, but in the context of good whites. Mm. You must know the song Amazing Grace.
Mm.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, who saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm blind, but was saved, but now I can see. Something rather like that. It's a famous, famous song.
Yes, yes.
Well, the writer was a white man, a slave trader, and he a captain on a slave boat, and he had a spiritual awakening. And how did he spend the rest of his life? As a minister and an abolitionist, ardently for abolition. CRT ignores that amazing man. CRT ignores everything except that blacks have been treated badly. It ignores, I was brought up anti-racist. So it ignores that my parents over in Austria bought Uncle Tom's Cabin. Like, why would they have bought that book and had that in their small library, except they were in favor of equality, anti-racism. So my first thing on CRT is it never mentions once that the race, that the most of the people who were for abolition were whites. And they were, huge numbers were in a country called England, which is not known for its black population. At least not in the 19th century. And then the second thing about CRT that ignores, it focuses on the United States, but slavery was a worldwide thing. And do you know where the expression Dr. Livingstone, I presume, comes from?
You are referring to the African continent, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And I am referring to another ardent abolitionist. He, in fact, was one of the two major mobilizers of British abolition forces to end what? The Arab Muslim slave trade in Africa. And he recorded so much. And I didn't know about this. And then I came across an article on him. And I just was interested because I knew Dr. Livingstone, I presume, but I had no idea who he was. Like, so this article said, now, who was David Livingstone? And I went, well, exactly. Who was he? And I read the article and I read about his efforts. And he was also an explorer, tried to find the head of the Nile. But he wrote, if my efforts end the Arab Muslim slave trade, this is worth 100 times than any discovery of the head of the Nile. He talked about horrors such as watching a massacre of 400 Africans, Africans tied together by neck yokes and everything, 1,000 strong being brought to the ocean. No living person that he saw for 120 miles. The area was so decimated by the slave traders who captured people. Why doesn't CRT talk about that? If you want to talk about reality, you have to take all of reality into account, not just like, oh, I want to talk about fingernails, but I won't talk about human beings. And I don't mean that slavery in the US was a fingernail. It was important. But please, let's talk about all of reality, including that many Aboriginal tribes in North America had slavery. It was just part of things. So
do you think, Elsa, that critical race theory actually has nothing to do with black people? It's more of a politicized power game.
It's a power game. It's also how the anti-racist movement has been taken away from human rights for equal rights for Blacks. Yeah, it's a power game. So much is a power game. So much is meant to turn us against each other. For example, hardly anyone knows that South Africa was not inhabited by the Blacks who are there when whites came. So it's like whites pushed away those Blacks. But in fact, there were huge areas were empty, and that there were Blacks coming in even during the time of apartheid. So apartheid, which I am against, of course, and you are against, was still better living conditions for Blacks than in neighboring Black-ruled countries. So, you know, I really believe, you know, what I believe in truth and facts. And, you know, so you that's know, where I'm coming from. And CRT is against them.
Yeah, I mean, critical race theory is a very, it's a very manipulated and constructed concept. I mean, it has nothing to do with improvement, surely.
No, well, supposedly it does. Like if whites give enough reparation and et cetera, et cetera. But what it really does is it fuels Black rage. It gets people caught at stage three, which I call sunshine and thunderbolts, the time when anger is most likely to come out. And I will say that many Blacks in the United States have been damaged by the policies which gave a lot more money to a woman if there was no man in the family and she had children and she was on welfare. And so over the last 40 years, Black families have gone from 80% dual parent, original dual parent, to 20% dual parent in the inner cities. So, and this would make a whole massive generation of young men who grew up basically fatherless, and also with a mother who might be angry at men and maybe taking out some of the anger of boys and boys in a boy gang culture. So there was a destructive policy which was supposed to be for the good, but instead what it did, it decimated the Black family. The Black inner city family, not the Black suburban family, because Black suburban families have not been destroyed by it because they weren't on welfare. But it's exactly people who were on welfare. Now, if you look back, you say it's got to be destructive of the family if you encourage men to leave by giving the woman more. So even if the man might move out on a sham move out, there was a strong encouragement to destroy the family. And there should be no policy that does that instead of one that encourages a strong family unit for children. So I think so much has been set up to destroy.
You're listening to TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The latest research by Redfield and Wilton Strategies, released on the 17th of June, finds that the economy is on the top of mind for midterm voters. The survey asks respondents which issues are most likely to determine how you vote in the November midterm election. Respondents were asked to select their top three issues, and the economy topped the list, with 61% identifying it as a top issue. No other issues were close. Healthcare arrived at a distant second, with 31% placing it among the top issues. Abortion hit third at 27%, followed by immigration at 22%. It's notable that foreign policy and defence only came in at 10%. Because the United States' economic woes, to a large extent, have been a product of the military-industrial complex and disastrous foreign interventions. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission to have more people sign up as organ, eye, and tissue donors. What drives her? Roxanne received a heart transplant made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day to devote myself to signing up the most people in the United States. That's my goal.
Now she's a powerful force for good. What could you make possible as an organ, eye, and tissue donor? Leave behind the gift of life. Go to organdonor.gov. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Also, there was a study done a few years ago with the American military, more specifically the Army, where they wanted to know what male soldiers felt about having female soldiers alongside them. And it was a very interesting conclusion that female soldiers reduced the morale of the male soldiers, which obviously negatively affects the strength of the military in that, in the sense of the army. And I can understand that because men have this desire intrinsically to protect women. And so their focus changes from where the gun is pointed to who's standing next to them. Do you think that there is still a place for gender roles in the modern world?
I do. And I think it is a complex issue and I don't have all the answers. There's the woman's desire to be in the military. So I remember as a child, I heard about women who disguised themselves as men. Even there were comics on somebody who did so that they could serve again in the Civil War in the United States. And there was one woman who was injured several times. And the last time she was injured so badly, it was found out she was a woman. But she had for a couple of years hidden the fact she was so desiring to fight. So there's that thing about women who really want a certain role. Now, how do you balance it? Now, yes, men want to be protecting a woman. Is it only trained or if they work with women, if they already have women in the battalion, is there a way that they come to see these as fellow soldiers, that they're, if the woman acts in a way that she's a fellow soldier, as I'm presuming this woman did? Again, I'm not talking about knowing enough. I'm not talking about having all the answers. I just do believe that there are some things where you have to balance priorities. You want to win that battle. As a woman, I want that battle won too. So what most wins the battle? I also go, there are some women who really want to be there. Now, this is not going to be a little wimpy woman like, oh, dear. On the other hand, my guess is it won't be a lot of women who want to be on the front lines. How do we make space? So I'm for, like, as well as possible, how do we make space? Jeremy, before we end this, could I take about 30 seconds to plug something I'm doing?
With pleasure.
Okay. I have launched an online virtual cafe just last week, Z's Cafe Cafe. So what's different about it? You're going to hear me with ideas. Like last week, I presented on CRT. But then after that, instead of it just being you and me, the people who were there, it was a discussion. And that comes from my past as a prof, that I like to lecture, sure, but I only like to do it part-time. And then I want to know, where is everybody else at? So if this appeals to you, you can go to zscafecafe.com or email me at elsa@zscafecafe.com or contact the station or something. I want more people who really want to discuss issues. And I'll just say something else. There's also creative stuff. My other side, again, inherited from my father, I write poetry. So there were also a couple of poems last week, and there was also discussion of those. So that's my plug. And now, to go back, I don't have all the answers. And, you know, it's more like I want that study. I know Israel has done different things. By the way, different armies have different things also for men. I don't know if this is the case, but I have been told that the Israeli army will not let fathers onto the front line. Now, that makes sense to me. It's saying being a father is more important than being a frontline soldier. We have enough frontline soldiers. But no one can replace the father in your child's life, even a stepfather or whatever. So I am in favor of that, not allowing fathers onto the front line. Because I think that when someone has chosen to be a father, that to me is an incredibly important thing. Of course, it would take away the right of fathers to go on the front line. And again, I'm not saying it's the answer, but I would say, I would like to throw it out as something to be discussed. is it okay, except in very dire situations, to put a father of a child, let's say under 18, into harm's way? I don't mean as a backup. I don't mean as, you know, away from the battlefield. But what would it have done to me if my father had gone into the army and had died? Two of his brothers were in an army and both of them died and they never had children.
Also, what are your views on, well, let me rephrase the question. So the comedian Bill Burr, he had this great sketch in which he said the reason why men should earn more than women is because it's a surcharge in the event that the Titanic sinks and all the women and children get saved while all the men go down with the ship. Now, obviously it's a joke, but there is an interesting underpinned comment there. I mean, men went down with the Titanic. And is that something that, I don't know how to ask the question. Is that something that should be celebrated because of the heroism and the nobility?
Or who didn't take that seriously, like the warning, the boat's going down, get people. The first boats went with hardly anyone on them, like 13 people on one of the first boats. So one, you cannot have a boat go without enough of those life rafts, or they're not rafts, whatever it is, lifeboats. So that's number one. So you that should be illegal, should have been illegal. Secondly, the answer is no, and I'll say it from my experience. I wanted to be paid the same amount as a man for doing my work. And I was a tenured professor. I got paid the same amount as a man. I would have been really pissed off to know that a guy, just in case he ever got on something like the Titanic, like I would have 100%. Said, could you please, let's get you on a Titanic fast and I'll get the extra from your salary. So no, you know, my mother had a quadruple bypass. I don't know if the surgeon was a man or a woman, but I don't think that one, or race or sexual orientation or disability, except I don't want a blind person, for example, doing quadruple bypass. So there are some jobs you can't do. Like you can't do. Like there was a kid who, like, do you know that bank machines, when you drive through, they have Braille. And so a little kid looked at it and said, mommy, why do they let blind people drive? You know, but that you really don't need Braille. That is a
fascinating question.
Yes. So no, I don't want a surcharge for that.
No, look.
I'm sorry, you men, you're going to have to get your ego stroked in some other way. By the way, I haven't known a man who ever pulled that kind of arguments on me.
No, but it was obviously a joke. But I mean, I think the point that he was trying to allude to is that why did men go down with the ship? You know, what is up with that kind of preference? And I think your knee-jerk reaction is, well, because women can have more kids. But if the men go down with the ship, you know, theoretically, then they can't have more kids.
Exactly. I am for a better world where both men and women pay attention to what's going on. And also at that time, women didn't have the vote, let alone that women got decent salaries or that they could have most jobs. So I think if you take away the barriers to women like Nellie McClung fought for, and by the way, she had the support of her pharmacist husband in doing what she did, but she was lucky to have the support. Now, but she was in favor of all the women who didn't have support getting to have rights. So no, I'm sorry. I want full pay, you know?
You're the same kind of feminist as my mother. And I think that's the best kind of feminist. But
I think that's the only kind of feminist. That's the only kind of feminist. The other is not.
Well, in that case, isn't it just about being normal? Isn't that just how normal, rational people should think?
That's what I thought as a child. And then I had to face the fact that women did have all kinds of obstacles. So you have, like, the reason you have a surgeon is because, yeah, it's just normal to repair people, but you need specific people, specific focus. So feminism to me was a focus on getting women equal rights. And that included also getting specific rights. So the college where I taught, I had women considerably my senior who were barely my senior in seniority. And that was because they had chosen to have children. And if they stayed away for more than 6 weeks, they were fired. Because that was I would say that was an anti-feminist rule. I think what you have to do is juggle, you know, like kids need parents. So when I got there, you could have 1 or 2 years of leave of absence and you came back at your original seniority. That to me takes reality into account. That's what I am for. So I am for any group that needs rights that are not there. And that group will push for buses for the disabled, all that kind of stuff. Now, I also believe that outsiders who are not blind should be able to work for the rights of the blind.
Elsa, I've got to jump in because we've got about 20 seconds. But what I am going to do is I'm going to thank you for joining me for this conversation. Elsa Shida,
it's been
an absolute pleasure chatting to you. And have a great day further. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas on TNT Radio.